Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We have a listener of the week, Chelsea Ferraro. Quote, your show is such an inspiration to me and I enjoy listening each and every week. I do my best to encourage others to do the same. End quote. Chelsea, I can't ask anything more. That is just outstanding. Thank you so much. You have my best wishes for your new job. And I'm going to send you a video. And from that video, you choose a book from the Nonprofit Radio Library, and I'll ship it out to you. It's yours. Congratulations, Chelsea, listener of the week, and thank you so much for loving Nonprofit Radio. I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with asthmatic eosinophilia if I got wind of the idea that you missed today's show. The agitator's donor retention. Roger Craver is the agitator, and his book is Retention Fundraising. He has strategies to help you keep the donors you've got. And wearable and mobile tech, Google Glass, iBeacon, these and other devices and apps have implications for your organization. Should you pay attention and where? How do you avoid shiny object syndrome? Avi Kaplan is director of online strategy at RAD Campaign, and we talked at NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference. On Tony's Take Two, between the guests, a double honor, and a fellowship opening. We're sponsored by Opportunity Collaboration, the working meeting on poverty reduction that will ruin you for every other conference. I'm really glad that Roger Craver, the agitator, is with me. He's the agitator at theagitator.net. He's been shaking things up for a long time in big ways. He helped launch organizations like Common Cause, Greenpeace, the National Organization for Women, and Amnesty International. Damn, that's impressive. His book is Retention Fundraising, The New Art and Science of Keeping Your Donors for Life, published by Emerson & Church. He's at Roger Craver on Twitter, and right now he's on Nonprofit Radio. Welcome, Roger Craver.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be with you.
It's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure to interview the agitator. I love that, the agitator. That's cool.
Thank you.
Did you think about the anarchist? Did you consider that or no?
I don't need that much chaos. I think just stirring things up in an agitating way is good enough.
Okay, that's sufficient. I understand. Why was there a need for a book called Retention Fundraising?
Well, for the last 10 years, possibly 15 years, American nonprofits and European nonprofits have been basically losing more donors than they're gaining. And that is a real problem, not only for the present, but for the future. The history of fundraising before then was that donors were fairly easy to come by, and the cost of acquiring them was relatively inexpensive. And so there was a sort of burn and churn mentality that, so what, if we lose the donors, we'll get new donors and simply replace them. Well, that's not possible anymore. Mm. And so people who are caring about their organization's future need to be caring about holding on to the donors they have.
Early in the book, you cite a 2013 AFP, Association of Fundraising Professionals study, that says that a few things. It starts with flat fundraising. Every $100 raised from new donors was offset by $100 in losses.
That's right. And it got worse. It got worse in 2014. It was offset by $106.
Oh, really? Losses. Oh, my
yes.
goodness.
Yes.
We are going the wrong way.
We sure
Holy
are.
Cow.
We
All
sure
right.
are.
Oh, my. And then also that there was negative growth in the number of donors. For every 100 donors acquired, 107 were lost.
That's right. A pretty frightening statistic when you couple that with the fact that the number of nonprofits has grown enormously. In the last 30 years, it's grown from about 600,000 to 1,500,000 nonprofits. So many more nonprofits chasing far fewer donors. That, in essence, is the problem and why retention is so important.
Many more charities chasing many fewer donors. Right. All right. So that is clearly unsustainable. All right. So what are we going to do about this?
Well, that's what I asked myself. After watching these statistics for a long time, I decided there there really has to be an empirical way to find out why donors leave and what we can do to keep them in the fold.
Yes, the study.
And so we set out to do and did a 2-year study of 250 nonprofits in the United States and in the United Kingdom, and surveyed tens of thousands of donors to determine why they leave and then what steps an organization could take to hold on to them. And that it is the findings from that study that I've encapsulated in this book, along with some quite practical suggestions on what organizations can do to stem this hemorrhaging.
We're going to get to those because you call them retention wins.
Yep.
Now, finger pointing is not particularly valuable, but I'd like to do some anyway.
Okay.
It's my show. We're going to do whatever the hell I want. Where do you think how do you think this problem arose, this laissez-faire, lackadaisical attitude about how we treat our donors and it doesn't matter, we lose some, we'll gain more back? Where does the fault lie, you think?
Well, it arose from the days when it was so easy and inexpensive to acquire donors, and at a time when direct response became a very popular way of acquiring donors. And so the mindset became sort of it's easier to sign a purchase order for direct mail lists and printing than it is to really worry about how to take care of donors.
Oh,
a rather casual attitude.
Okay, so we can sign this purchase order for an acquisition mailing campaign or whatever channel we use, acquisition campaign. And that's easier than being introspective and evaluating and then improving the way we treat our donors.
Exactly. Because the reality is that treating a donor well takes thought, takes work, takes planning, and takes the willingness to build a relationship between the organization and the donor. And that involves a lot more than simply mailing a letter or making a phone call.
And I love that we're talking to someone who has studied this problem. I notice nonprofit radio, the last couple of weeks, I've been saying introspection a lot. It just seems to be coming up with a number of guests that nonprofits need to be introspective about whatever subject we're talking about. There's not enough critical self-evaluation.
No, there isn't, and one of the reasons for that, there's a so-called there's a horrible jargon term called best practices.
Now, oh, okay.
What in the earth best practices are, I don't know, and I've been doing this for 50 years, but people latch on to that term, and they most often compare their organization with other organizations and say, well, if we're doing about as well as the other guy, so we must be using best practices. But that, you know, there's no introspection involved in that. That's like reading the box score or something.
It makes
no sense.
I mean, the other organization might be doing it badly. I mean, you can't just say that we're consistent with others. They may be underachievers. And
no,
by the way, we have on nonprofit radio, we have jargon jail, but best practices has been used so often that I'm not even sure that's jargon anymore. It's more like cliche.
Right.
We should send
okay.
send you to instead of jargon jail, we'll send you to cliche camp. Are you near an airport? Is that jets taking off in your backyard?
I am about 30 miles away, but one just came over. So
okay.
Maybe we're being buzzed, Tony.
All right, as long as it kept going, it didn't stop.
Yes, it
right?
Did.
Okay.
It did.
We would have heard it if it stopped. All right. So I'll put you in cliche camp, which doesn't sound as bad as jargon jail. It's like for minor offenders. That's a juvenile offense.
Don't put me in there. That's the trade. I don't use it.
No, okay.
I don't think
okay.
there is such okay. a thing as best practices.
And I've been hearing state of the art a lot, too. Maybe that's replacing best practices, but it's just a substitution. All right.
Spare us. And thought leadership. We could talk all day about jargon jail.
Thought leadership, yes. I know. There's a lot of it in nonprofits, and that's why nonprofit radio has jargon jail. Sometimes I let offenders off easy, and other times Probation is harder to come by. All right, we're going to go out for a break, and when Roger and I come back, we got a good amount of time, and we're going to talk about some of these retention wins that are easy to do and how to help you build trust with your current existing donors so they don't depart. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. We're pre-recorded this week. I'm sorry I can't send town and city live listener love, but you know that I love our live listeners. So that's out to each of you listening live. Podcast pleasantries, those on the time shift, wherever you are, whatever device, whatever time, whenever, however many days or weeks later you listen to Nonprofit Radio, pleasantries to you. And never forget our affiliates. Very important. Affiliate affection out to each of our affiliates throughout the country. Nonprofit Radio is heard. Okay, Roger Craver. Now, how can we be sure that these retention wins are not cloaked best practices?
Well, we can be sure based on empirical data as measured from the responses of thousands and thousands of donors. There's no conjecture here on my part. You know, there's lots of so-called best practices where the people say, well, you know, you ought to print your thank you notes on very high quality paper, or you ought to get them out within 24 hours, or you need to send X number of cultivation pieces with no asks. And all that, of course, is pure tribal wisdom or best practices, whatever you want to call it. So here we in this study, we measured what people care most about and what they don't care about, and put it in priority order according to their responses, and came up with a way of isolating the seven drivers that that make for retention, or flip side of retention, of course, is attrition. And you know, Tony, all of this is really based on, apart from our empirical data, there's a lot of common sense here, but common sense, it turns out, is a fairly rare commodity. And it's the business of building relationships, which is what donor retention is all about, is based on two things, consistency and reliability. None of us listening to this program have serious personal relationships that don't have an element, a substantial element of consistency and reliability. If I say to my spouse, I'm going to meet you at 7:30, and I'm persistently late or early or inconsistent with that, that relationship is not going to last. The same when it comes to
Have you been talking to my wife? You're describing my marriage. Let's keep personalities and personal lives out of this, shall we?
All right. Well, let's translate it into the nonprofit world. If I receive an appeal, a prospect appeal, let's say from an animal organization, and it talks about rescuing puppies and cats, and I send them a contribution, and the next thing I know, I get an acknowledgement letter about the oceans and let's save some whales. That is not consistent, and I will not likely be back to that organization with another gift. Or if they send that acknowledgement letter and it says Roger Carver instead of Roger Craver,
right,
and I call their helpline, and I get a rather surly or non-caring clerk, And he says, well, I'll try to get to it as soon as I can, and isn't very helpful. I'm not going to go back with another gift because that's an unreliable organization. So we have to understand that relationships are built on trust, and the two pillars of trust are consistency and reliability. And therein lies the key to retention, because it leads to the next element of retention, which is understanding the importance of the donor's attitude. You know, it's not the donor's behavior that we should be concerned about. Behavior in the sense of transactions, giving money or not giving money.
It is
the donor's attitude that we need to care about, because the organization determines what that attitude is going to be by the organization's actions.
Yeah, when
the organization is doing things that affect the donor positively, then the donor's attitude will lead to behavior that makes a transaction, increases the size of a gift, renews the membership, whatever the desired outcome. But it's not the donor per se that is to blame or not to blame. It is the organization's actions that determine how that donor feels about the organization. And that's something that folks really need to understand if they're serious about donor retention.
We're also talking about perception, right? How do they perceive your organization? Is it professional? Does it care about me as a donor? Aside from all the programmatic important work that it's doing, but how does it treat our relationship?
That's right.
Okay.
And that, Tony, that is paramount in a donor's psyche.
Yeah.
People hire nonprofits to do a variety of things, a number of jobs. Sometimes it's to make them feel good. Sometimes it's to enable them to be able to tell their peer group that they're doing this or that. Sometimes it's because they want to do a specific thing. But very seldom is it what the organization claims it is in their appeals. I mean, people really don't care that you have 10 regional offices or that your CEO has appeared 6 times in the New York Times. None of that is important, yet organizations just love talking about themselves, and nothing is more deadly in building a donor relationship than that.
All right, let's move into these retention wins, which I'll remind people or just reiterate, these are based on empirical study, not conventional wisdom, or would you say tribal wisdom, that's been repeated at conference after conference. Just because one organization does it a certain way and they've been successful doesn't mean that that's going to be successful universally. It's not really a lesson. That's an anecdote. You like saying thank you. That sounds pretty simple. Why does this need to be said?
Well, it needs to be said because 64% of American nonprofits don't bother thanking their donors. We can start right there.
Two-thirds of gifts are not acknowledged and thanked, you're saying?
Are not acknowledged or thanked. Some of that two-thirds is acknowledged in the sense of a tax receipt. But a tax receipt doesn't go very far to build it, toward building a personal relationship.
That's a little cold. Yeah. Retain this receipt for your tax advisor's evaluation. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So the importance of a thank you is that it is the initial step in building a relationship. And we've learned a couple things through this study that are quite important. One is it needs to be personal. And by that I don't mean personalized. I mean personal sounding and warm of heart and meaningful to the donor. Not necessarily long, but it really has to be real. We are so happy to have received your $25 gift. It will be put to immediate and effective use. Sincerely, XYZ. That is not a thank you. Rather, it is, dear Tony, your check arrived. I can't tell you how happy it's going to make Sammy, who tomorrow will have not only a meal, but he will have a toy for Christmas.
Yes.
And so forth. So it really needs to connect the donor to the organization and the donor's gift to a beneficiary in a real sense of the word.
Wait, before you get
to be timely. Yeah. There's no automatic rule that it has to go out within 24 hours, but it should go out promptly after receipt of the gift, because in the studies we've done, the preferential time is 48 hours. But donors are forgiving of taking longer than that. What they're not forgiving of are these form-printed, impersonal thank yous that just ring hollow. So that's the importance of saying thank you.
One of the things you mentioned that I want to emphasize is that the thank you doesn't have to be long.
No.
It doesn't. I've heard this and said it many times on the show, heard it from guests, to be genuine and sincere does not require something long.
No, I mean, I love you, if it's said in a heartfelt way, three words does an awful lot to a relationship.
Yeah. You're right. That's an outstanding analogy. Cool. All right. And the book points out that there are some resources available around thank yous. You have there's a thank you letter clinic at SOFI, which is the Showcase of Fundraising, Inspiration, and Innovation. And you're very thoughtful to point out that people can lift thank you letter ideas from there, but not copy and paste.
No, not copy and paste, but take Lisa Sargent has put that together and done a terrific job, and she has an attic full of wonderful thank you campaigns in there, and get inspired by it, and by all means use it. You know, Shaw had a saying, the mediocre borrow, genius steals. And there's lots of good stuff on SOFI that's worth looking at that will give you ideas. And this thank you clinic is certainly one of them.
All right. The mediocre borrow and the genius steals. All right. I'm in the wrong business. I got to transcend the laws a little more often.
There we go.
You want us to be boring. What do you mean? What's behind that? Be boring.
Let's go back to the term consistency. One of the realities, the painful realities among most nonprofits, is they get tired of their same message, and as a result, because they're bored, they hire another copywriter or the same copywriter and say, let's do something fancier, something that glows in the dark, something different, something exciting. Well, that is not only a horrible waste of time and money, it's also destructive of relationships. Consistency is important, and that's what I mean by be boring. You may be tired of the same message, you, Mr. or Mrs. Organization, of the same message, but the donor isn't tired of the same message. They joined for that reason, and they want to stay involved for that reason. So be consistent. That doesn't mean you have to copy the same thing every time, but stay on the same themes that have produced the donor in the first place.
Yeah.
And the same way a good politician will give the same stump speech over and over again. She may be absolutely sick and tired of it, and the press may be sick and tired of it, and her staff may be sick and tired of it. But it is the speech that works with voters, and it has to be given over and over again.
You have a background in political consulting, too, don't you?
Yes, I do. I did a lot of work for 20 years for a number of Democratic senators and presidential candidates, and, of course, the citizen advocacy work for groups like Greenpeace, the ACLU, and others, that's all tied to politics.
Yeah. You've been around, you've been doing this a long time. Did you say 50 years earlier, I believe? Did you say?
I'm probably older than most of the trees you're looking at, Tony.
Well, I'm in New York, so the new
trees grow.
The average tree life in New York is, I think, 7 years for the street trees, so you got those covered. But all right, you've been around. I admire it. It's wisdom. It's wisdom coming. It's empirical.
There we go.
It's empirical wisdom. It's not anecdotal. Here's what's worked for me and my clients through the decades. Okay. You want to listen to donors, don't you?
Absolutely. And here is an area that organizations can really score against the competition and can also help themselves, because very few folks in the nonprofit world design efforts to get the feedback from their donors. You know, the corporate America spends billions of dollars getting feedback. If you go on an airline, you get off that airline, the next day you get a survey. You go to a hotel, the next day you get a survey after you've checked out. My heavens, even IHOP does a survey on the back of the receipts from their breakfast. And the reason they do this is they know that that asking for people's opinion builds satisfaction and builds loyalty. And it is so easy to do, and it is so inexpensive to do, but most nonprofits don't do it, and they just keep the mute button on rather than listen to their donors. But by having feedback mechanisms, you can find out that your website sucks when it comes to the donate page, or you can find out that your donor service program isn't good. And these feedback mechanisms they're basically widgets that you can put on your website or questions you can put in your direct mail get the donor's opinion. And, you know, Tony, one other thing on that. You don't have to necessarily get a written response or a telephone response from a donor. The mere act of asking for someone's opinion and feedback will boost retention by 30%. That is a significant difference between doing it and not doing it.
Roger, we have to start to wrap up. We just have about 30 seconds left, and I want listeners, of course, to know there are many more retention wins in the book, Retention Fundraising, published by Emerson & Church. Roger, just spend a couple seconds. Small and mid-sized shops have a big advantage here, don't they?
They absolutely do, and I love your slogan for the other 95%, because they have a huge advantage because they can do things personally, and a well-run nonprofit shop that pays attention to its donors will exceed return on investment by 5 to 10 times higher than the big organizations.
Roger Craver, he's the Agitator. You'll find him at theagitator.net and at Roger Craver on Twitter. Roger, thank you so much for sharing all that empirical wisdom.
It's my pleasure, and I join Chelsea in your fan club, Tony.
Oh, thank you. Cool. Write something nice, and I'll make you a listener of the week.
Thank
you again.
Thank you, Tony.
Tony's Take Two and Wearable, Mobile, and Tech coming up. First, Opportunity Collaboration. It was a terrific experience. It really kicked us up to the next level. That's Ross Baird, Executive Director of Village Capital. And there are lots of funders at OC. Extremely useful. Contacts, projects, funding. It opens people. That's Alberto Vasquez, President of Sociedad y Discapacidad in Sodis, Peru. OC, Opportunity Collaboration, is a week-long conference in Ixtapa, Mexico, centered around poverty reduction throughout the world. It's in October. You've heard me tell you, I was there last year, and I'm going again this year. If your work is related at all to poverty reduction anywhere in the world, check it out, opportunitycollaboration.net. I'm being honored by Hermandad, a charity that brings water to the poorest of the poor in the Dominican Republic. I've been helping them save lives for lots of years. And it would be a double honor if you'd be with me by making a gift to Hermandad. We can save lives together in the Dominican Republic and be honored together on April 23rd. And that's really what I'm thinking. Video and links are at tonymartinetti.com. And I thank you very much for considering helping me save those lives. Are you a millennial interested in measuring social good? Then Evaluate for Change has your next career move. They are recruiting for their Millennial Nonprofit Data Fellowship. The ideal candidate is a millennial, employed or volunteering at a nonprofit, and dedicated to using data to improve the nonprofit sector. Roger Craver would approve of this very strongly, I believe. The fellowship is part-time and includes training, mentoring, and a final capstone project. The application deadline is April 30th. Apply at evaluateforchange.com. That is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 10th of April, 14th show of the year. And here is my nonprofit technology conference interview on wearable and mobile tech with Avi Koplan. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the Nonprofit Technology Conference 2015. We're in Austin, Texas at the Convention Center in Austin. My guest is Avi Koplan. He's Director of Online Strategy for RAD Campaign. Avi, welcome.
Thank you, Tony.
Pleasure to have you. Your topic is wearable and mobile tech, what it means for nonprofits. There's a lot of new stuff out there.
There is, yes.
Just generally. Now, we have plenty of time together, so you don't have to pack it all into one answer, but generally, what does it mean for nonprofits?
I think there's a lot of exciting technologies emerging. A lot of organizations are trying to make sure that they're experimenting and taking advantage of all the technology available to them. And mobile's obviously a really great opportunity for engagement. But I think what it means is it's also, it's become a bit of a buzzword to make, you know, what are you doing on mobile?
Yeah.
So what I think it means is it's an opportunity to come up with some valuable ways to engage with your community, but also to be really thoughtful and making sure that you are investing your time and resources wisely in this area.
Yes, we need to avoid shiny object syndrome.
Yes.
Okay, because there are plenty of shiny objects to attract our attention. All right. What's interesting to you? What do you like to start talking about?
Sure. I think one of the starting points that a lot of nonprofits today have when they think about mobile is related to their websites. Having a mobile website, going mobile responsive, has become really widespread tactic. If your site's not mobile responsive, you're not creating a great experience for a huge portion of your audience that's growing.
Do we have just interrupt you? I interrupt a lot because I like to have conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many people view more likely to be viewing on a mobile device than a desktop or laptop?
Well, it kind of depends on your audience, but I think a good benchmark is somewhere between 20% and 30% for the average nonprofit. It depends on your sector. If your audience is more, advocacy, volunteer-focused, I expect that to be higher. If your demographic is younger, more, if you're like dosomething.org, there are, I would assume, upwards of 50% of their audience is mobile browsing audience.
I've had Aria Finger on the show, the COO of Do Something. She's been on a couple times. And also, they have TMI, their spinoff for consulting.
Sure.
I had her on talking about that. I think she's CEO of that and COO of Do Something. That's probably at least 50% mobile, likely higher.
For a larger legacy organization, associations, I would expect around 20%.
Yeah.
But, it's easy to figure that out exactly for your website with Google Analytics or another analytics platform if you have that set up.
Okay, so we certainly should be paying attention to how many people are viewing our site through mobile. Now, it seems a lot that a lot of times in some organizations, people aren't even going back to the website that often. They're more engaging on the social channels.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's being conscious of where your content's being engaged with, right? If it's all in the Facebook news feed or Instagram feeds or whatever platform you observe people, talking about your story, a lot of the social experience is on mobile as well. So being conscious of what networks folks are using to talk about, where that conversation's happening, it becomes a mobile conversation as well. I think a lot of people don't wind up at your homepage for mobile, but the landing pages that they get, I don't know what the stat is, but it's a email as well has shifted to mobile.
Oh, for sure.
In the office, a lot of people at their desks work with two devices because they just find email triage just so much easier on a tablet or a phone. I do that myself often. So then you wind up at a landing page and it's mobile.
This is a cool phrase. I never heard this phrase, email triage, because it's that suggests we got a medical emergency. We're in a crisis and we're triaging all our messages.
Yeah. I mean,
I never heard that phrase. It's cool. All right.
Yeah. Kind of just filtering through things.
Yeah.
And, I think a lot of the email platforms try to help people with that. And there's on mobile people, there's some interesting applications to help people with that task. But
All right. Email triage.
Email triage, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about if we do need to be mobile optimized, which is most likely, what should we be thinking about? How do we achieve this?
Well, the idea of a responsive website is that, you know, in the design, as you develop the site, you create breakpoints so that you can have your site be device aware and you know send out different code to different devices based on to create a good experience for that tailored to each device. But for nonprofits, a more cost effective way of creating a good mobile experience is to create breakpoints based on the browser screen size. So.
All right, break this down for us. Get a little technical, but that's
sure.
Okay. I have jargon jail on nonprofit radio, so you're not going to get too
I'll
far.
I'll try and stay out of jail.
Yes, or it'll be quick parole.
Sure. So, if your website has a style sheet that the browser loads you to produce the design in the browser, the site will load with different layout of different elements on the page based on how wide your screen is. And so, if you're on a 9-inch tablet or a 11-inch tablet or mm-hmm. a 15-inch screen, the pixel width will determine the layout of the elements on the page. But only one set of code will have to be downloaded. So you keep your site, it's a balance between the speed of your site loading and an effective way to create a diverse experience without having to think about exactly tailor for every device.
So. Okay. All right. So size is critical. What else? What else should we be thinking about?
For responsive sites?
Yeah. Yeah. Mobile responsive. Yeah.
It does help to know what, you want to have a sense of the devices people are using.
You can find that in Google Analytics.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, if you're working with, we at Rad Campaign, we build a lot of responsive websites. And what we often do, there's a device lab actually near our office in Washington, D.C., and you can go and test on specific devices, especially on the Android platform. There's so many different, if you have an iPhone, there's, six different models, something like that, since the beginning of iPhone. But on Android, there's thousands. So you can check out those devices, load your site, and run testing to see exactly how it's going to appear. So if you have the patience for that and the resources if you're developing a site in-house, it's definitely worthwhile. Especially if you I've had the experience of, your executive director has a unique device that nobody else in your audience has, and they,
yes.
They complain, why doesn't this element load well for me? It looks goofy. And you hope to catch all those specific cases as you're doing your testing, but sometimes it really is something quirky with that device or, a plugin or an extension somebody has. And everybody's browsing experience, if you're on a tablet, on a desktop, it's unique based on your own quirky setup. So,
mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the wearable technology. That's part of your workshop also.
Sure.
What's exciting there, and where do you see for nonprofits?
Sure. And I see this as kind of more on the horizon in terms of being a worthwhile investment. But wearables are everything from the fitness tracking devices like the Fitbit and. Microsoft has a fitness device coming out. There's a company called Misfit. The Apple Watch is coming out, I think, in April. So they're all kind of tracking these analytics of user activity, your steps, your fitness activities.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting to me, I think, just because it's creating the consumer familiarity of wearing a device that gives you some feedback. The interesting piece for nonprofit communications and engagement is that these devices start to have notifications built in that are people interact with them a little bit differently.
Oh, explain how that works. Because this is new to a lot of people. Yeah,
absolutely.
How do these notifications? What do you mean?
Sure. So I mean, just like you get a push notification, you have to pull out your phone usually. Like Fitbit, I think they have a couple of models now. There's a small enough screen, simple text, but you can just it'll pop up and you can read your text message right on the device on your wrist, which saves you from taking your phone out. For nonprofits, and that's becoming a more and more devices are getting becoming popular that have that feature, not just for text messaging, but you know, any type of notification that can show up, anything that you know, Android has a platform called Android Wear or Android Watch, okay. And the iPhone Apple Watch is going to be coming out, and that has its own platform. So a lot of mobile apps that people already have installed on their phones, you know, Instagram or Yo or Snapchat or whatever it is, are going to have be easily be able to be extended to have notifications going to people's wrists, which for nonprofits is something, you know, I could easily see somebody getting very excited about that, or leadership kind of jumping the gun and saying, oh, well, now we need to just send our donation form to everybody's wrist.
Yeah.
So it just highlights the importance to be very conscious of people's patience and attention, valuing the permission they're giving you to, you know, if somebody does give you permission to ping their wrist, that's heavy responsibility not to abuse that, to respect your audience and be very thoughtful about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so. And should you even go there if you don't have that permission, which most organizations probably do not, this yeah. is also new.
And you know, and just because you might technically grow a list, I think that's an awareness you have to have now with text communications. A lot of organizations that have been successful for advocacy with these, you know, SMS campaigns and, you know, text to give, mm-hmm. you may have a growing, you know, list of phone numbers. They've given their permission, but maybe they don't recall or they didn't really understand quite what permission they were giving you. So you really have to be very careful with that. You don't want to attack those relationships.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
So with wearables, I just see that as something to be aware of, that, you know, their notifications are becoming, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, it's an increasing space that people are conscious of day to day. And there is an opportunity to create a good, you know, an interesting experience of engagement, but you have to be very thoughtful about it. So I just kind of think it's kind of on the horizon as something to be thinking
okay.
about.
And respectful of the relationship and the permission you've been given, yeah. basically, is your point.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag nonprofitradio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, "Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office." Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Let's see. Sticking with the wearables, do you see that having value in particular sectors? What are you thinking there?
Yeah, I mean, another kind of area
of... What ideas are occurring to you?
Yeah, another area of wearables relates to kind of... Well, I mean, everybody... Google came out with this thing called Glass, which everybody was... You know, it kind of made everyone look like a robot.
Yeah, I tried one of those.
Yeah, I didn't try it, but...
There was a friend of mine in New York who was one of the selected beta testers, I guess.
Okay.
So I had it on for 5 minutes or something. Yeah. I mean, it was cool. I talked to it.
Yeah,
I saw stuff. You know, I saw stuff in the lenses.
Yeah,
but did it really go? Has it really taken off the way everybody thought it was going to?
I think the expectation was, you know, people got excited. Oh, everybody's going to have a camera right in front of them, and be, you know, another screen they're looking at, and you know, you won't know that I'm, I don't know, teenagers watching.
Yeah.
You know, Breaking Bad right in front of them without mom knowing, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the specialized experience for that premise is about augmented reality. You know, engaging with a task that's in front of you, with some helpful data or instruction, mm-hmm. Available that you may have, that it's more helpful to have literally overlaid on your vision for a specialized task. So.
It didn't really take off as all the early press was saying. It was revolutionary. Right.
So, I mean, I see that you asked about, areas, fields where that could be helpful. I think in specialized fields, medical fields, where you need unique expertise, maybe in the field. Microsoft has something called HoloLens coming out, and
HoloLens,
like, okay. A hologram. All right. And the kind of early demos are just kind of whiz bang looking, but some of them are very practical. Like they had one demo where it was about teaching someone how to repair a light switch in their home, which doesn't seem like a huge deal, but I could imagine Habitat for Humanity coming up with HoloLens demos for you could maybe not need a construction, as many construction supervisors on site,
kind of doing
right,
it
the volunteers,
as,
right.
Doing it as you're watching it in your lens,
maybe
for how to spackle or
yeah,
tape
or tech support. Amazon has they have a set of tech, help support. I can't remember what it's called, but if you have an Amazon tablet or a Fire tablet, whatever they have, you can hit a button and then there'll be someone who pops up on the screen and. Okay. You say, I don't know how, I tried to rent this movie and what's going on? So I can imagine you could be doing some specialized task for your programmatic work and call up somebody with you to help you troubleshoot what you're dealing
exactly
with.
Exactly where you are.
Yeah.
Immediate help.
Yeah.
In your
I mean,
lens.
I could say, if we're here at the nonprofit technology conference, maybe you have an AV volunteer who's trying to set up radio and streaming setup for your live event, and they're having trouble. They could, put on their HoloLens or whatever, and have somebody help them. Literally,
yes.
Figure I don't have audio mixing
right. But the person,
expertise,
the
but
person
somebody else does.
You, the person helping you could right. see, and you can see them, and they can talk you through, and actually you can do it as the as you're on with them. What is iBeacon?
iBeacons are kind of it's a sensor. It's kind of a more granular location sensor. So we have GPS, which are satellites that can, peg your location, as a data point within, I think it's a few meters or something.
All right.
Maybe even like 20 meters. And, we have, there's like location tags where if you've been in like a store, the shoplifting tags to stop you from taking things out of the store, they know some radius of where that item is in the store.
Okay.
So iBeacons they work, I think, mostly off of the new Bluetooth technology, and they can triangulate you within a space, within a room. So if there were iBeacons in this room and we kind of tapped into that network on our devices, they could know where this device is within inches. So what's interesting about that to me is the opportunity to create an experience a curated experience for a space. So if you're the most immediate application I see now is for museums, where it's very important where museum goers are in the space
as to what content they're going to receive.
What they're going to receive. If you're sharing as they move through the experience, what added value you can perspective on the history of the pieces that they're seeing, or scientific information on the exhibit they're looking at based on where they are, but also maybe the path they went through.
Yes, how people interact with your content.
Right. Now they're gone. You could, it takes a lot of resources maybe to do this, but you could if you could peg that person's path through your space, you could say, everybody who spent, everybody who went through the butterfly exhibit, without them, checking off a box or raising their hand or any, send them all an email about our butterfly research, or tailor this donation request to that group, which you can only do if, they've you know, you have the space pegged with iBeacons to be able to know where they are, and you have some requests maybe at the beginning of the, you know, at the entrance way, you know, let us know, let us have these permissions.
Yeah, may we track your time through our collection.
Right.
Okay.
You're gonna start to see these around. I mean, it goes back again to that same permission thing, but also, you know, that lack of consumer awareness about the data that is around there for us already. You know, it's a little spooky sometimes, but, you know, if you've ever done, like, SunPass or MetroPass on your car, you know, there's that, people have a subscription, you know, to pay the tolls quickly.
Right.
That is actually, not the only place where that gets picked up. When you go in, that little device is always pinging out it's saying, here I am, with a unique... It's the same thing that's on, like...
Well, isn't that how we find out what traffic is like ahead on our GPS?
Yeah.
And there are implications for law enforcement using it for potentially determining speeding.
All kinds of things.
But then also traffic volume.
Right. But the permission you gave in one location with iBeacons, that could be carried in other locations, right? So if there's a reciprocal relationship between... you know, the museum and other places in the city, then they know, you know, you could segment to the people on your list who are, you know, frequent restaurant goers at, you know, the Stone Crab restaurant, whatever.
But you've got to know that permission was granted. I mean, you've got to know that you're granting that.
Maybe that not.
I think you go through the butterfly exhibit. I mean, doesn't that need to be disclosed?
Well, I think
we're going to disclose to our partners. We're going to share with certain partners, and you'll receive offers related to
the platforms that are being set up for, you know, the way that it gets implemented. It's a tricky thing because the museum, you know, the point of permission may not even know the cascading effects of that permission.
Oh, but that's very risky. I don't think they're protecting their constituents adequately if they don't even know.
You have to be thoughtful about it.
Where it's going to go. Yeah. All right. We have just about a minute left. What do you want to wrap up with? time flies on Nonprofit Radio.
It sure does.
What's wearable and mobile and what nonprofits should be thinking about?
Yeah. I mean, I think my big takeaway with this is, you know, there are some interesting technologies out there, but you should be very thoughtful. Make sure that what you're investing your time and resources are in isn't shiny object, like you mentioned, is going to have a real specific value add for your audience. Be thoughtful about the comfort level of your audience and community engaging with that technology and the maturity of the platform. You know, there's a few different iBeacons. There's a few different, you know, implementations of that. So you want to be thoughtful about which one you choose. Make sure it's one that you can support over the long term, as you have to continue to maintain that technology. And be thoughtful about the hidden costs. You know, it's not just the spend to implement and set up whatever you've started. Right. You have to support it. Maybe you have to train your staff. You have an ongoing communications. Maybe you're likely going to need to iterate and continue to develop it. So being thoughtful about those hidden costs and how you're going to measure those and evaluate your success.
Avi Kaplan, he is a director of online strategy for Rad Campaign. Avi, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
It's my pleasure. This is Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio coverage of Nonprofit Technology Conference, NTC 2015. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks to everybody at N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network, and NTC. I love being there. Next week, two more NTC interviews, Embrace Emerging Social Media, and Your Content Strategy on Those New Channels. If you missed any part of today's show, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Where in the world else would you go? Opportunity collaboration. The world convenes for poverty reduction. It'll ruin you for every other conference, and that really is the truth. OpportunityCollaboration.net. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, SusanChavez.com, and this terrific music is by Scott Stein of Brooklyn. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about nonprofit radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. Yes. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperstein.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.